My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. So we got like, what do we got? 53 people on Zoom from all over the place. I got a lot of friends here, a lot of friends on Zoom. I want to say especially, I want to call out and say especially hi. And so I'm so grateful that Steve Schmergel's with us on Zoom. I know Yvonne's not here, so she must be there. I love you, Steve. And I'm always thinking about you and always praying for you. She's on there? Yeah. Okay. God bless y'all. And I just came back from Georgia. I was there for about 4 or 5 days, and I went to a couple of, regular meetings like this, where they're actually live human beings. Not that the human beings on here aren't live. Well, I'm not sure when they're live or not. Who knows? You know, and I met a few of them, but who knows what's going on? It could be puppets. I know you're not puppets. I've met most of you. So it's good to be here. I said I was an alcoholic. Remember the South Dixie group? And this is the 12th time I've been here, and we're on step 11. I'm not going to explain that, but there was one meeting we had where it was birthday night for about 45 minutes, and I gave a 10-minute talk on introduction to the four steps. So that's why we're on step 11. So I think I'm going to talk about step 11. As a matter of fact, there's a possibility I've been talking about step 11 or step 6 or step 7, step 3. Throughout this entire thing. Who knows what's going on? I might not have been talking about any of the steps. Who knows? You'll figure this thing out. I'll tell you how prepared I am for this meeting. I am so prepared for this meeting that literally 2 minutes before the meeting started, I was looking up shit. You know what I mean? In the big book and stuff like that, which is sort of like, I don't know how many years. There was a time when I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. So I've been around for a while. But there was a time when I actually gave a crap what I was saying and what other people thought about me, which is a terrible situation to be in. Has anybody ever had that? Because that's part of the disease, by the way. That's part of the disease, worrying about what other people think about you, their judgment about you. I know it's part of the disease because they say when you get better, you know, when you get rocking in fourth dimension existence, I know it's part of the disease because one of the promises is fear of people and of insecurity will leave you. So the promise is you'll no longer go through life afraid of what other people think about you, then I guess part of the disease is having that fear. But there was a time, and I've had that fear all my life, because I've had this disease all my life. I had that fear of what other people think about me. You know, Carl Menninger wrote the book, Man Against Himself, in the 1930s, one of the top psychiatrists, and he had a whole book on suicide, which is what drinking is all about, isn't it? Says alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. That's what he says in the book, in the chapter. It's a whole chapter on alcoholics. He says we're out to destroy ourselves. You know, I mean, deep down, look, one of the old ideas that we have to get rid of all the old ideas is, or the result, whatever that is, result is nil. One of the old ideas is that, what is the old idea? There goes that senility again. It's that nobody could ever understand me. I'm so unique. Nobody's going to know what I'm talking about. I don't even understand me. And then, you know, you come into here and after a while, you know, it's a short while in here, you realize that everybody understands you. For the first time, I found people that understand me, you know what I mean? And so you ultimately, after you go to a lot of meetings here, a lot of people, and you talk at me and stuff like that, you realize that all you got to do is say anything that comes into your mind. And you, no matter if you thought it, 5,000 people thought it. It's like we're twins, you know, we don't look like everybody, you know, people come up to you. You know, and they're black, they're white, they're fat, they're skinny, and they say, oh, you're talking about me. I say, no, I'm talking about me, you know, but I mean, you understand that. And one of the things that happens as an alcoholic that I've discovered is that every once in a while, no matter how well I'm doing materially, no matter how well I think I'm doing spiritually, no matter how much time I have in the program, every once in a while, in the shower, driving the car, something like that, this thought pops up. I ought to kill myself. I'm a piece of crap. I'll never be okay. Now, that thought rarely pops up now in me, but it does from time to time. Usually when I screw up or I don't, you know, something happens or whatever. And when I first came in, the idea that I'm worthless deep down inside, that I'm unworthy, I'm not good enough. And that one day, that incredible fear that everybody's going to find out what a fucking phony I am. When I first came in, that stuff came up all the time. And I'm an alcoholic, so I'm delusional. I can't separate the truth from the false. I tell myself things like, I don't give a crap what other people think about me, when all I do is think about what other people think about me. That's the horror of my life. I wish I didn't care what other people thought about me. And what happens is, and, you know, why do you think I spend money I don't have to buy crap I don't need to impress people I don't even like? Why do you think I'm worried about what I said I'm going to say at a meeting, or I don't say anything at a meeting? Because I'm worried about if I say some people laugh at me and think I'm stupid. Or then I say something at the meeting. Then I drop from the meeting and I say, why did I say that? You know what I mean? And always second guessing myself, you know? And you know, some, I had that disease when I was drinking. Great thing about drinking is, you know, booze will take away the fear of people in 5 seconds, man. I look at some gal, I says, man, she's gorgeous. You know, I'd like to talk to her. And I don't know. I'm going to talk to her. 5 drinks, man, I'm all over that gal. You know what I mean? And I'm like white on rice on her, you know? And, that's what I fear. Yeah, booze, alcohol is the greatest wiper out of fear. But, you know, the truth is that that feeling of unworthiness that I don't even admit I have, because as an alcoholic, I tell myself rational lies. I am perfectly capable of having these feelings of inferiority, or unworthiness, and at the same time denying that I have them. You know, I can hold two different thoughts in my mind. I can, in one part of my mind, say, I am God's gift to humanity. You know, if only everybody did what I did, I am so brilliant. I'm smarter than everybody. I'm the smartest guy in the room. And on the other part of my brain, I say, I'm a piece of shit. I'll never be okay. I might as well kill myself. And I can think both things at the same time, which sets up some sort of nervousness. You know what I mean? What do they call it? What's that line I use?
Nervous disposition.
You know, you drink alcohol, those things sort of whack, come together, you know, and you're John Wayne or something like that. And you know, but that stuff, that less than stuff, that unworthy stuff, which you can't quite place it or figure it out, or, you know, I'm 72 years old. I've been in the program over 40 years. It's so clear to me now, stuff that was so unclear to me before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, or even for the first 10 years. It's so clear to me, you know, and that's because part of the alcoholism is not being able to see things clearly. And I think 1 Corinthians 13 says we see through a glass darkly, you know. You know, I have an alcoholic sponsor will come to me and says, you don't know me. I says, no. Here's the deal. I absolutely know you. I can see through you. You don't know you. You don't know you. The reason you keep screwing up and keep doing things and you can't understand why, and instead of listening to me, coming up to me and say, this is why I'm screwing up. And you tell me why you think you're screwing up, and you're all wrong, but you believe it. Always wrong, but never in doubt. You know what I mean? At some point in time, you get the point to say, maybe I don't know shit. You know, maybe this is possibly my best thing got me in here. And what I ultimately find out is my alcoholism centers in my mind, not my body. I had it before I started drinking. I drank to get rid of it. And I had it after I stopped drinking, and it's there. And 90% of the stuff I don't even know I have. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear that I don't even know about. 100 forms, maybe 1,000 forms. I'm delusional. There's no shot of getting rid of the selfishness that I don't even know I have. We must get rid of it or it kills us. God makes that possible. And so I got this crazy disease. So, and it's impossible for me to try to figure it out. And part of my disease is I so want to just figure it out. I so don't want to go up to somebody else and ask them why I'm so nuts. And even if I ask them, as soon as they start talking, I say, I don't want to listen to this bullshit. I so don't want to hear the truth. And if I hear the truth, I don't want to accept the truth. Or I don't understand, I don't accept the truth. I mean, this is a horrible thing because it works in your brain. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, will find none at all. The book spells it out. Unless you accept this thing, consequence, there are consequences to being an alcoholic. And the problem is to accept the consequences, I have to accept in my brain, and my brain is diseased. It's in a state of dis-ease. And I don't know about you, but I don't have a spare brain. What I may have is a sponsor. What I may have is a mentor. What I may have is somebody in my life who I respect, who I want what they have, where I will actually listen to what they say to me and what they tell me, even though I don't understand it, where I listen to what they say to me and tell me to do, even though I don't agree with it, where they listen to me and try to figure out what I'm saying and hang around me, even though they think I'm wrong and they have no idea because they've been so beaten down that they've accepted the fact that they don't have an understanding of a word I'm saying, but they know one thing. They don't want to be in charge of their lives anymore. They give up the ghost. So I find that essentially there are two kinds of people in AA that I either sponsor or I run into. They're the guys that have hit bottom, literally hit bottom. And they'll do anything to stay sober. And then they see me at a meeting. I'm using myself, you understand? Because I'm using my own experience. This is my experience, okay? So I'm not trying to preach or teach. Right? I'm just telling you this is my experiences. The guy comes up to me and he, you know, and whatever I said, something's hit him. You know what I mean? And he's at that place where he's ready. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length, then you're ready to take the, and he's ready. And he says, can we get together? Will you find me, blah, blah, blah. And I'd like to say, he says, yeah, I'm sure, fine. I say yes to anybody. What do you mean? Yes, say yes to 200 people. One will call you up, you know, and which is true. You know what I mean? You got to sponsor 20 to get two, you know, and the bottom line, I said, yeah, sure. What do I care? You know, as long as I don't have to actually work, you know, I mean, so I say yes. And all of a sudden the guy, and it may be on a Zoom meeting, it may be this meeting. I say, well, what meetings you go to? And I say, well, I go to about, you know, three or four meetings a day. On Zoom, you can do that, believe it or not. I do a lot of Zoom stuff. And then I go to this and I do this meeting, I do that meeting. I said, why don't you, I'll give you a list of meetings I go to, why don't you just show up? And all of a sudden, the next day, I'm at a meeting and the guy's there. And I'm always, believe it or not, shocked. I'm always like in a state of surprise that the freaking guy actually showed up. You know what I mean? I said, hey, it's good to see you and everything. Then we go to the meeting. Then next thing that happens, I go to the next meeting and the guy's there. And then I go to the next meeting, the men's meeting, maybe the back on track group, and the guy is there. And then for the next year, the guy is showing up at every meeting I'm at. I'm not saying because I'm so good or anything like that. It may happen to other people the same way. All of a sudden, this guy, I can't get rid of him because he is like addicted to whatever the hell I'm dishing out. And all I'm dishing out is the big book and about God and everything like that. But that's what he wants to hear, that I couldn't get rid of him with a shotgun. You understand what I'm saying? And they stay sober and they go on and then they'll say something like, oh, what are you doing tonight? I said, I'm coming up here, and they'll show up at the diner or they'll do something like that. And they do that deal like I did with every one of my sponsors. Like I shadowed them. I stalked my sponsors. Stalking sponsors shouldn't be really unusual for alcoholics because believe me, I stalked women all the time. I mean, I was a lounge lizard. I wanted what she had. I was ready to go to any length to get it. You know what I mean? I was a lounge lizard, buddy, you know. I was persistent, you know. Yeah, you're laughing, guys. You don't know what it's like. But let me tell you, it was a serious problem. But that's, I stalked AA, you know, gurus and old timers and stuff like that, where like I used to go after women, really. I mean, I'm not ashamed of it because it's the truth. And, you know, and then there's the guy who comes up and he says, you know, listen, I'd like to hang around, blah, blah, blah. And I say, I give him the meeting, I don't see him. I don't see him. And then he calls me up one day, or I bounce into him and he's got a DUI or he's got this and that. And he says, remember me? Remember we spoke? I said, yeah, well, no, I don't remember. I said, when was that? He says, 3 years ago, we were in the 12-step house and we had a long conversation. You don't remember? I said, no, I don't remember. He says, yeah, it was about 3 years ago. I said, I'm sorry, unless I see you. I don't really, the truth is we may have had a 3-hour conversation. I'm not going to remember it unless I see you all the time. They said, well, I really want to do this thing now. I said, what should I do? I said, well, why don't you meet me for lunch tomorrow? Why don't you meet me for that? And they don't show up. Well, they show up one time and they disappear. You know what I mean? And those are the two types of people, basically, I see in AA. The ones that really want this thing and the dilettantes. They're like trying it out. You know, the bullshit artists. You know, I mean, when I say bullshit artist, I say in a loving way. Because the truth is, there, but for the grace of God goes, you know, like I said to my sponsor, I don't want to be a hypocrite. He said, too late, buddy. If you're in here, you've already busted hypocrite. You know, you say one thing, you do another thing. That's part and parcel of the disease. But the people that get sober, stay sober and get rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. The people that don't join the not drinking club, but are into the rocking in the fourth dimension club. You understand? And are experiencing much better. The people that actually lose fear of other people, who actually deal with the disease, who really are reborn and have a whole different mind, who experience what Dr. Young was talking about, ideas, emotions, attitudes, that were the guiding force of their lives, are shifted to one side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Those people who receive everything that God will give them, everything they need, if they stay close to him and perform his work well and are ready to perform his work, those people are the people that stay sober for 30, 40 years. And they sponsor other people, and that's what happens, you know? I mean, it's no mystery. It's no mystery what God will do. What he's done for others, he'll do for you. It's no mystery who's going to make it and who's not going to make it. You can stay sober for 20 years and then drink. You can stay sober for 10 years and feel sorry for yourself and still not have any emotional sobriety. It has nothing to do with time, and it has everything to do with time. But the bottom line is there reaches a point where time is not enough to give real happiness and real joy. It just ain't enough. You know, and that's the deal. And eventually something happens, something gives. And this has to do with the God thing, you know, and has to do with commitment and who you hang out with. So much has to do with who you hang out with, who you hang out with and the books you read. And the books you read depends upon who you hang out with. Now, I don't know. I'm not going to say the words. I don't even use the word lucky anymore. I'm blessed. Given my background and how crazy I am, I don't know why I chose the men I chose to hang out with. I don't know. Is that for me? Just check on it, you know, maybe. I'm so much more advanced now, spiritually. That kind of stuff used to upset me. But it doesn't anymore. This happens. One time I yelled at somebody. I was like sarcastic and mean, which is a trait I have sometimes. It's like a gentle rebuke and at somebody for the phone going off. And I'll say something like, you know who you can tell not to make in the meeting? People who's got their phone on. You can't keep your phone off for an hour during a meeting. Don't expect to stay sober. And next thing you know, my phone goes off. It's just so embarrassing. So freaking embarrassing. You know what I mean? It's an embarrassment. So I don't do that anymore. I don't do that anymore. You know, the only thing you need in order to do a good AA meeting is to be sincere. And once you learn how to fake that, you got it made. So, but there was a time that... I'm making hard lefts and fast rides. There was a time when I started off saying that I really had that part of the disease for many years, many years. I'm not saying I'm totally over it, but many years. I had that part of the disease where I was so concerned about what other people thought about me that I get real nervous before I speak. And I sort of plan out what I was going to say, which is a big mistake. Because you lose it 5 seconds after you get up here, you're nervous and everything like that. And then I second guess myself after I got out of the meeting. Well, what do you think? How'd you like it? Was that okay? Yeah, it was good. Really? Was, you know, I mean, it's just such a horror story, you know what I mean? To be so self-involved and worried about this stuff. But it is what it is. It's the truth. If you're an alcoholic, you're gonna go through that for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever the hell you're gonna go through that stuff. And then only, I want to make this clear, only because of my faith in God. Only because of my faith in God. And my knowing that no matter what happened, if I trusted in him, he would give me the words to say, was I able to turn that shit over, just get up blind and just start talking about what's on my heart. All the fear went away. And I think I gave better meetings, to be honest with you, for some reason. I don't know. Maybe because it's not me talking. I'm just trusting in him, letting go. But that is not a natural thing for an alcoholic. It's not a natural thing for an alcoholic to give up control over people and what he says and not worry about it and everything like that. And I pray before every meeting. I say, let the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, my Lord, my God, my rock, and my redeemer. Right out of the Bible. I'm a big Bible guy. You'll hear some of that. I don't even worry about talking about the Bible at AA meetings because Steve, it's like, what am I going to worry about? Some guy sitting in the front row doesn't pay my Visa card. You know what I mean? I'm just going to talk about what I'm supposed to talk about. And you know, there's so many people in AA. You got such a choice who you can be, what you want, with who want. You get such a bevy of choices. You can say, oh, I want what that guy, I want what that gal. I went to a meeting when I was 3 months sober, and there was a guy dying of cancer, and he was just bringing joy to everybody's heart and just talking about how much he loved God and loved the Lord and how everything was unbelievable. And he left. I had such a great feeling about this guy, and I said, my sponsor, you've heard about this guy, Al Kennedy, and I said, man, I really like to know what group he goes to so I can act with him. He says, he's dying of cancer. I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who was speaking. He says, he's dying of cancer. And so he's got like 6 months to live or something like that. I said, get out of here. Guy was helping people. He wasn't, I said, I'm just telling you. And 6 months later, he was gone. And I said, man, I wish I could have that Al Kennedy deal. I mean, don't get me wrong, not drinking is something. But the Al Kennedy deal, you know, is that AA? Is that AA? Is that AA? Where you lose fear of even dying? You lose fear. Is that AA? Where somehow, is that possible? Is it possible not to worry about what other people think about you? Is it possibly rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence? Which you're not, is it possible to experience much of heaven? I mean, I'm reading this book. It's a basic text. It says this is what happened. Is it possible to fear people and have economic insecurity? Is it possible to lose the worry and things? Is it possible? The book is all about that. They're reading these promises at every meeting. They think it's so cool. Is it really possible? Because I see around me at meetings, people are just thumb-sucking crybabies talking about their problems. And there's like one guy, there's one Al Kennedy. Is it possible? Because that's what I want. So what do? I hang around the Al Kennedys. I hang around the Al Kennedys. They can't get rid of me like glue. I hang around them. And so my deal now is I talk mostly about what I like. You can call it emotional sobriety. You can talk about anything, but it's basically talking about God and bringing God into your life and having a fervent and absolute belief in God. And I talk about that at meetings because most of the meetings that I see that I go to, people aren't talking about it. Based upon my 40 years of experience, based upon what I know happens to be, based upon the book, Dr. Bob, The Good Old Times, based upon what I know the program is all about, the real program, not AA Lite. I know it's all about this whole thing. Every page is about developing a faith in God that will solve your problems and rock you into the fourth dimension of existence. I am not involved in the not drinking club. In the plug in the jug, listen. So if there's some old crotchety timer out there saying, oh, it's all about the not drinking, I'm not involved in that. Although, as my sponsor used to say to me, if you go through the whole day and you screw up anything, you haven't had a drink or a winner. And I believe that. And that's what you tell newcomers. And that's what you tell old timers. And that's what you tell everybody, because it's true. But in a sense, if that's the only thing you got, you're going to be a sorry dude. Because this book is not about not drinking. This book is about how to live life and experience the joy of living. You're not in a jail sentence, you know, and I want the enthusiasm and the joy of living, which means we wrote a book because if a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we'd be sober a long time ago. Didn't help us because we didn't have the power to live like human beings in an incredible way. We didn't have, I don't want to, oh, I just wish I was normal. Who the frick wants that? Have you seen normal out there? Home to work, home to living lives of quiet desperation. Who wants normal? I want extraordinary. What's wrong with extraordinary? What's wrong with God giving me this disease, this thorn in my flesh, so that I can learn the value of suffering, overcome this stuff, okay? Through repeatedly trying to do this thing and get closer to him and increase my contact with him so I can grow in the image and likeness of my creator. And I know what that image looks like now because he's not a fluffy thing or a fucking tree. You understand? Because I don't know how to be a tree. You understand what I'm saying? It's a real deal where I know exactly what he does and who he is and what he wants me to be like. And you want something? He's all through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know the books they were reading when they wrote this thing. Because I read Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times. I know what this thing is all about. I read Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times. I read the part where they said, where the founder said, the books we found absolutely essential. Absolutely. Have you ever read that thing in the book where it says, really, haven't seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? Do you guys think that what you're doing right now has anything to do with what they were doing in 1935? Whoa, you ought to read Dr. Bob, The Good Old Timers, between 1935 and 1945 and stuff like that, what they were doing. You couldn't go to a meeting unless you got down on your knees and gave your life to God. You couldn't go to a meeting unless you got down on your knees and gave your life to God. They were serious. You didn't have anybody in AA meetings at that time. I can tell you this. You didn't have anybody in AA meetings at that time saying, well, if they said the God stuff, I wouldn't be here. You're right. You wouldn't have been there. You're right. It's true. You would have been out the door going to get another drink until you were begging to get in and begging to get down on your knees. You understand? They were focused. They knew exactly, when you came in here, they knew exactly what this thing was all about and what they were chopping off it onto. And then we became enlightened. And you dropped all that stuff, you know? Let me read you something. Let me have my mouse. I need my mouse. Thank you. This is a mouse. I want to read you something. So the books they found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. Now, that's just not my words. That's our book. That's our program. The books that we found absolutely essential, if you want to thoroughly find that, 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. That's what the old-timers said, okay? So let me just read something from you. Did you know that AA was almost called the James Club of the big Book of James? It's true. I mean, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion. You're not entitled to your own facts. So let me read you something out of chapter 1. Right off the bat, out of the Book of James. Don't worry, this won't hurt you. Won't hurt you. Won't kill you. You know what I mean? And believe me, when I leave, there'll be plenty of guys to tell you it's all bullshit. So don't worry about it. You just follow them and talk a little bit more about your sex life or relationships. By the way, I've never been to a group in AA where they talked about where they didn't want to have a meeting on relationships where it all had to do with sex and romance. Isn't that right? You ever to an AA meeting where they want to talk about relationships? It's always about boyfriends, girlfriends, sex, and romance. Right? You know what our book says? You know what the 6F says? The one that separates men from the boys? It says we don't want to say anything or deprecate material achievement. But never have we had a worse situation in our lives than pinning our lives on, what is this, prestige, money, and romance. And all they want to do at meetings is talk about their sex life and their romance life and whether they're going to have a boyfriend, girlfriend, a husband, or they're lonely or shit like that. All they want to do is talk about the dis-ease. And why don't they have what they want? Why aren't they happy? Why don't I have this and why don't I have that? And why can't I get here and why can't I get there? Here's the reason why. Because you're a freaking goof. Because like John Wayne says, you know, my favorite statement, same with John Wayne, life is tough. And when you're stupid, it's even tougher. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So you want to hang around AA where the whole thing is about focusing on God and glorifying God and bringing glory to God and having a relationship with God. And the guys that are doing that are being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. They're going to the whole banquet and the people who aren't are sucking their thumbs and being pissed and mad at the guys that are talking about that shit, by the way, because they don't want you to hear it. Because if you hear it and you get a hold of this, maybe it'll go throughout AA. They'll be talking about it and they might have to do it. And they don't want to do it because the hackles in the necks are standing up, like it says in chapter of the agnostics. That's why we wrote a book and that's why we have to talk about God. It's not a mistake. So here's James, the book of James. Here's a cute little thing. So one of the problems I have, before I get into this, one of the problems I have is, after, let's talk about the 11th step. It has to do with increasing your conscious contact with God. First, you get some contact with him, you know, during the first 3, 4, 5 months, higher power, could be your sponsor group. Then you sort of like increase a little your conscious contact. Then you go to more meetings, you hang around more people, you increase a little more. And then, you know, maybe after a year, you got to increase a little more. Remember, every day you're adding on. Every day you're increasing, right? As you're increasing, you're changing. You're changing this because Dr. Jung said that's how you get the psychic change. You don't change yourself. You can't change yourself. You're powerless over changing yourself. You can't stop thinking. You can't stop worrying. You cannot stop worrying. What you can do is you could say what I used to do. I got to stop worrying about this. You ever say I got to stop drinking? I'm not going to have a drink today. I'm not going to worry about this thing today. I'm not going to think about this thing. You can do that and be abysmal failure over and over again. You're powerless over everything. I hear people say, well, the only power I have is how I react. No, you don't have a power over that either. You don't have a power over that either. You say, well, the only power I have is the power to change and react. No, you don't have power over that either. You have no power. None, zero. There is one who has all power. You may have read this somewhere. It's actually in our literature. That one is God. May you find him now. No human power can do it. You can't do it. Your thinking can't do it. Only God can do it. They're serious. about the God thing. So here's from the book of James. So here's the problem I have. So after 40, so listen. So every year I'm increasing my contact with God, trying to increase my contact with God. How do I do that? I think about him. I pray about it. I follow what I say in the book. I do what I hang around these guys that are older than me, maybe have 20 years on me, maybe they have 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. They're talking about God. I get sponsors that are talking about God. Each sponsor has more and more of the God thing. They're into the God thing. We can go through all my sponsors, what they did. So every month, every year, one day, next thing you know, they're sending me to church and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to church. I'm going to Bible study because I want to hang around with people that are talking about God. I want to talk about people who talk about God because I'm no longer in the spiritual kindergarten that AA is, because at some point in time, you really got to get out of the kindergarten. After 10, 15 years, you really got to go to like high school. You know what I mean? Spiritually, you want to go to high school. You don't want to have the same spiritual connection with God at 10 years that you had at 2 months. Because it don't work. It don't work. You're just not happy about your sobriety. And so at 10 years, all of a sudden, you get to a point where you maybe get hit down a little, maybe get bashed down a little, and some guy says, why don't you try Bible study? And all of a sudden, it's not such a stupid thing. You initially don't want to do it because it's different, and you're scared they'll laugh at you at AA. Because in AA, they apparently hate the Bible. Well, I got that from the fellowship. The fellowship is not the program. You know, our fellowship is wonderful, and I love it, but, you know, it's not Well People's Anonymous. You understand what I'm saying? You got to watch out what you pick up from the fellowship. They'll tell you all over the place. You'll hear church is bad. I'm spiritual, not religious. That means religious people are bad. They're not as... religious people are not, that go to church and read the Bible, they're not as spiritually attuned to the music of the orbs that us alcoholics are, that are out there looking to score. You know what I mean? They just act better than we do, but it's all bullshit. It's all, you know what I mean? So you go to these sponsors, and they're all of a sudden they're spiritual and religious. They believe in this stuff. They're into that stuff. They spend all their time praying, reading the Bible, trying to figure out who God is and what God wants them to do, like into that stuff. Where I can hang out with people who say, man, if they talk about God when I was here, I would have left. You can hang out with those people that put doubt in your mind. Where you can sit in a meeting, and the big book says we try to increase our conscious contact with God, and the best way to increase your conscious contact with God is hanging around with groups of alcoholics that tell you the God thing is stupid. That'll help you out, especially if you have that other consequence that alcoholics have that are codependent, where you worry about what other people think about you. So the last thing you want is anybody in AA laughing at you or rolling their eyes at you, because that would just kill you. Because the point is, you want to blend and you want to be it because you're a please love me-aholic. So if you hang out in a group of people where it seems that all the sharp guys and the cool guys talk down about God on spiritual religious, you think that, you know, maybe the God thing is kind of overworked. The religious thing is overworked. You're not going to talk about it. You're going to worry about it and all that sort of stuff. And then you're going to be a slave. You'll be a slave to your fear. And you will never experience that promise where fear of people and economic insecurity will leave you. And the reason I'm able to talk about this, I know you sit there and think, man, nobody talks about this shit in AA the way this guy's talking. And the reason I can talk about it is because I'm not scared of y'all. So this ain't a dress rehearsal. You can live your life scared of people and what they think about you, or you can be free. You can be free. You can know the new freedom and the new happiness, or you can just continue to live your life dry without drinking and think that you're really doing this thing. So this is from the book. So the bottom line is because of the stuff that I've been through. So what do you think happens to you if you really work this thing and you want to increase your conscious contact with God, and you're one of the men, you separate yourself from the boys, and the bottom line is all you want is grow nearer with your creator, and you're constantly humbling on your knees, asking for help and doing whatever you have to do in order to get there, never knowing you'll never be perfect, but never settling, always striving for the perfection that is in the minds of God, where God isn't a dirty word, where you not only lose a fear of people, but you never apologize for God. You never apologize for God, because all men of faith have courage. They trust their God, because that's what you read in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you're less worried about what the guy in the front row thinks about you and more concerned with whether or not you're following what the pioneers did in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What do you think happens when you do that day by day for 40 years? So this is what happens. You're looking at it. So don't get mad at me. Get mad at the book Alcoholics. Get mad at Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a product of working this program. And I'm not the only one on the planet that works it this way. Trust me, I'm not the only guy. I don't know, maybe one in 100, one in 200 or something. Many are called, but few are chosen. Okay. So here's the book again. Now we're going to get into it. This is right from chapter one. You're going to like this.
Do you have my keys?
This is the stuff they're reading when they wrote the big book. If any of you lacks wisdom, if anybody here, you know, lacks wisdom, you're not sure and you want God to answer your prayer, you lack wisdom. This is what the book of James says. If any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. How do you like that? If you lack wisdom, it'll give it to you. But now listen to the but. This was written 2,000 years ago. But when you ask, you must believe and not have any doubt. Because the one who doubts God, has doubting faith, is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from God. Should not expect to receive anything from God. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. So the next time you're concerned about why you're so freaking wacko, read this part of the book of James. It tells you why you're wacko. Now, let me ask something. How many of you think that's a little extreme? Ah, come on. It's a little extreme, don't you think? He's not going to give you anything? You mean sort of like half measures avail you nothing? Is that a little extreme? There is no middle of the road solution? Is that a little extreme? God is everything or he is nothing? What is your decision going to be? Is that a little extreme? Once you make a sincere decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. He will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. Is that a little extreme? How about this one? You ever hear people say, don't say God to newcomers, don't even talk about it? How about this one on page 98? Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he cannot get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Is that a little extreme? What about we are on a new basis, the basis of trusting in God? We trust the infinite God instead of our finite selves. We never apologize for God, never. We let him demonstrate in our lives what he could do for us. Is that a little extreme? I mean, how many statements of that can you count? I mean, I can rattle off about 20 more, and they're all over the book about God. How about the sixth step? Is that a little extreme? We don't settle, we shoot for perfection. How about the 11th step? Constantly increasing our contact with God. Is that a little extreme? How about this? We encourage church membership. We encourage church membership. Most of us belong to such organizations. Is that a little, they say it's optional, but most of us do it. Is that a little extreme? It's extra credit. It's extra credit. I mean, the real wackos, the Olympians, the guys that are going for the gold, not settling, they would probably do it. But not the guys who say, well, listen, I've already been to a meeting. You know, I don't need, you know, I'm not drinking. Get off my back. They're not going to do it. They don't have to do it. You think there are consequences to not doing things. There are consequences also to going for the extra credit. I mean, is this extreme stuff, really? Or is this what Alcoholics Anonymous is really all about? You know, I mean, is that what it's all about? Focusing on this stuff. I mean, the person you'll become the next 5 years will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And you know something? If you're free in this program, free from alcohol, you get to choose who you want to hang out with. I can tell exactly what's going on you based upon who you hang out with. I can tell what's going on with you based upon how many meetings you're going to. When Bill Wilson said, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me," and Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about and telling other people." Is that a little extreme? Bob Dodson didn't think it was extreme. He called it the golden text. Listen, when Bob Smith, our founder, said in the last chat, the last paragraph of his story, Dr. Bob's Nightmare, if you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, or have some other sort of intellectual pride in your brain that keeps you from understanding what we're talking about in this book, I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for people that don't understand this. What else can I feel? Your heavenly Father will never let you down. Is that a little extreme? When Dr. Bob visited Clarence, the brewmaster, one of the original founders of the Cleveland Group, in his hospital room, and he was 35 years old, he was 135 pounds. And Dr. Bob walked into him and said, "You're pretty young. I don't know whether you're ready." And Clarence said, "Man, I was down to 135 pounds, didn't have a job, didn't have clothes, didn't have money, didn't have anything. I didn't know how much more ready I could be. Still, I had to convince them." And then he said to me, he said, "Second question, do you believe in God, young fellow?" I mean, I'm talking, this is verbatim right out of the book. "Do you believe in God?" Second question, during a 12-step call by Dr. Bob, "Do you believe in God, young fellow?" "Well, I guess I do." Actually, what he said to him, you ready for this? He said, "What does that have to do with it?" And Dr. Bob's answer was, "Everything. Everything." Don't get mad at me. You know, I'll tell you what, you know who'd understand this talk? You know who'd get this talk? Bob Smith would get this talk. Clarence the Brewmaster would get this talk. Bill Wilson would understand this talk. You understand? The pioneers of Alcoholics Anonymous would understand this talk. You know, the priest that helped, Father Ed Dowling would understand this talk. Sam Shoemaker would have understood this talk. A lot of people would have understood this talk. The people that you listen to on tape, some people you would have, you know, Sandy Beach would have understood this. The people that you think are, you know, the people, Al Kennedy would have understood this talk. So after Clarence said the statement, when Bob Smith said everything, he says, "Well, I guess I do." He says, "Guess nothing. Guess nothing. You either do or you don't." He says, "I do." He says, "Now we're getting somewhere. Get down on your knees by the hospital bed. Get down on your knees. Get down on your knees." He got down on his knees. And he gave his life to God. And this is what Clarence said. He said, "There were no suggestions. I did what I was ordered to do."
That's right.
"I did what I was ordered to do." That's the guy I can tell the bullshit artists from the real guys. The real guys do what they're told to do. The other guys sort of weigh it in their minds. "I don't know. Do I not? You know, because they haven't had enough to drink. They still think they're smart. You know, it's real simple. It's not, you just have to put in a few years and sponsor a few people and see what's going on around here and who lasts, who doesn't. You can find out pretty much what the deal is. To get what most men don't have, you and women don't have, you need to be ready to do what most men and women won't do. This isn't something that's handed to you. This is about going through suffering. This is about going through doing stuff you want to do. This is about doing stuff you don't want to do. You know, this isn't about doing stuff you like. This is about doing stuff you don't understand. You know, this is about, you know, I had a guy say to me, and I used to say this, that alcoholics are like children. I've changed my mind. They sure look like children. They sort of act like angry 10-year-olds and everything, but they're really not like children. Well, they're sort of like children, but they're more than children. There are a certain subsection of children I call spoiled brats. Spoiled brats. Spoiled brats. Running around, doing whatever they want to do, thinking they're smarter than, better than anybody. Arrogant, spoiled brat. That's what I was. That's what, thank God for alcohol. Thank you, Jesus, for alcohol. If it wasn't for alcohol, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. Listen, alcohol, I don't hate alcohol. I love alcohol. it's the best salesman we got out there. Every 2 years, the alcohol comes through, wipes out all the bullshit. All those guys that say, I'm never going to do that, is a wham, they're gone. They're in jail and it's all over. It's the best friend alcohol has. Do you imagine if everybody who was an alcoholic who came in here, whether they did this thing or not, stayed? My God, we'd have fist fights in the aisles. You know what I mean? It'd be a horror story. But we get that booze, it just comes right through and they disappear. They're gone. You know? So I guess that's all I have to say on the 11th step. Thank you very much. God bless you.